There is something off about that horse.
You have an eye for animals, Lois. This horse is brain damaged. That's why I got it so cheap.
Peter, I don't think it's wise to have a brain-damaged horse as a house pet.
Shut up! You don't know nothing. About anything.
Whatever, Peter. Fine. Keep the horse.
Good. This family works much better when we're unified. You'll see, this horse will be a fine addition to our family. You know what? I don't want him to feel self-conscious. Everybody pee.
Peter, we're...
Everybody pee. Now!
We're an unusual family.
First of all, I just want to tell you what a great show you got. I listen to you all the time.
Thank you, thank you. What do you want to talk about?
Hey, did I tell you guys I got a goat?
America is under attack. I'm not sure if this is fully understood. America is under attack by lethal, violent, white nationalist terrorism. And if we're serious about confronting it, that means we have to have a different conversation than this hand-wringing and thoughts and prayers and, you know, that's too bad. This is a national security emergency. It is killing Americans, just as it is killing people around the world. And until this country has, one, serious readiness to confront white nationalist violence, and two, serious readiness to implement gun safety policies that most Americans think we ought to do anyway, we are going to continue to be leaving ourselves and our children vulnerable to these kinds of attack.
Little column A, little column B.
Yeah, baby!
Well, good morning, good evening, or good afternoon, wherever you are, whatever you do. A lot of things happening in the world today. Most of them are far, far beyond our control, you might say. So perhaps it's time we took a pause and thought about life and thought about the laws of gravity, some ancient history, geometric shapes, social theories, politics, and or the news. Don't touch that dial. Just try to hear me out for a little while. Well, on the one hand, it's good to be back. On the other hand, it just seems like it's more of the same repetitive arguments that are seemingly being replaced by modern social theory and intellectual sophistry, which has been couched as doctrine. What else is new, am I right? Here's how you get a hold of me. The text sheet is area code 209-565-DAVE. That's 209-565-3283. It's also for voicemail. Email Dave at thedavebowmanshow.com. And, of course, we're on the web. Use your preferred non-denominational web search browser to take you to plausiblylive.com or look for the Dave Bowman Show on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and SoundCloud. We'll talk about that more in a minute. Ego Bibera Capulis and Olive Verve. I drink coffee so that others might live. Well, thank you for indulging me for a week. It was interesting. It was very much interesting. So, in case you're not keeping up with the website, our budget's gotten a little tight. There's some things going on, and it's really not relevant to anything that we talk about here, except that it's about me, and someday Ben will watch this and he'll want to know. And so, Cammy and I talked about it, and we decided that I could go back to work. And so, I've taken a logistics position with a delivery company, and I'm a driver, by the way. I don't want to make it sound like I'm, you know, managing anything, because I'm not. It's supposed to be 2 days a week. So I got my first schedule this week, and it's 4 days a week and 32 hours. And it's like, that could be problematic. But anyway, we did the first day yesterday because the week runs Sunday to Saturday. And so I was on a full shift for Sunday, and it, you know, only took about 2 hours to do it. So it should not be a problem. What I'm saying, it was fascinating. One of the coolest things about it was on the first the second day I was there, we went on a ride along, and we were down by the Puget Sound Naval Shipyard, and we passed that, and the guy I was riding with said, "Hey, I just brought that one in the other day," and I looked over there, and sure as all heck, it's my boat. It's USS Michigan, and of course, company policies, you don't have your cell phone, you know, on in the car, and we were driving, there was traffic, and so. I did go back later with Ben and Cammy and was able to show them USS Michigan. It was really kind of cool. And I don't know. I mean, it's just one of those things where, you know, I'm happy about it. I don't know what else to tell you. I'm happy about it. It was there. So there you go. So what precipitated all this, of course, is a budgetary thing. And I don't need to make a lot of money. I really don't. But enough to you know, kind of tied over some things and carry over some things. And so I mentioned this the other day. And the other reason I brought all this up was because this Hal Turner thing is still pissing me off so bad. Number one, the guy flat out lied. And the thing is, and don't let him get away with it, he knows that he lied about a U.S. submarine being sunk. It was complete nonsense. He went on and on about how, oh, this is going to hurt my credibility. And now he's throwing a bitch fit because he can't raise any money. He needs $3,000 to run his show next month. And if he doesn't get $3,000, well, you won't be able to hear his show, what he has to say. And I, you know, come on, dude. Seriously, you're a piece of crap that's full of you know what. And anyway, the whole thing is just, I know it shouldn't bother me. I should just let it go. It doesn't matter to me because, again, I don't do this show to make money. Having said that, if you would like to support the show, and we do have a couple of really good donors to the show, I mean, who have in the past supported the show. We've had that, and I can't tell you how eternally grateful I am for that. I mean, there are costs involved with this. Sure, it's a hobby, but there are some costs that come along with it, but they're not huge. I tell people all the time, if you can't do a podcast on a shoestring, you shouldn't be doing it. But the bottom line is there are a few costs involved. And if it's something that interests you, if you just happen to have a few dollars laying around that you don't know what else to do with, I'm not going to give you a tax receipt. I'm not going to do any of that stuff. But you know, every little bit helps, I guess. So there are a Patreon links and there are PayPal links and that kind of stuff that are available to the show. But again, this show is not money. I will never pull that crap. I will never hold this show hostage or any show on the Podcast 99 Network hostage to fundraise. It's just it's outrageous. And I can't, you know, I've spent all week dealing. Well, not all week, but I've spent a good deal of the week dealing with people who, you know, want you to pay $298 for my podcast course. Like, don't do that. What are you insane? Don't do that. You know, look, if you really want to do a podcast and you really, really, really can't figure it out, Dave@thedavebowmanshow.com. Drop me an email. It's not, if you're spending more than, you know, basically buying your equipment and keeping your website up and that sort of stuff, you're doing it wrong. I mean, that's just really all there's to it. But there are people out there that think that this is all about money. And of course, it's not. It's sure, I'd love to have sponsors. If you want to sponsor the show, then go Dave at thedavebowmanshow.com. And I'll be happy to talk to you about it. We've had them in the past. But at the end of the day, it's not really what we do here. What we do here is talk about the issues and what's going on. And so it is that I return in the midst of yet another of the same arguments that we've had for years. Baltimore is a crap city. Did you know that? I've said this a million times, and I'm going to say it again. It doesn't matter what is said. It really doesn't. The only thing that matters is who says it. The fact that Donald Trump said that Baltimore is a, you know, third world hellhole is offensive. The fact that Bernie Sanders said it is okay. And he did say it. The fact that I've said it, I've been to Baltimore. Baltimore is actually a pretty cool place. It's one of my favorite cities to go to for baseball purposes. Baltimore fans are wonderful baseball fans. And if you ever get a chance to go there, I went to Old Memorial Stadium. But if you ever get a chance to go there, it's worth going. Anyway, a long time ago, in a place far, far away that I desperately want to visit someday, a place that holds my rapt attention every time I see another documentary about it, probably one that I've ever seen, you know, 15 times, is the Plateau at Giza in Egypt. And there, of course, are located the Great Pyramids. They're called the Great Pyramids because, well, they're great, I guess, and there's a bunch of them, and they're not the not-so-known pyramids that are spread out literally all over the world, including Egypt and Inca territory down in Mexico and everywhere else. The pyramids are fascinating to people because of their antiquity, because they are so ancient, and because for all that we know about the pyramids and we've basically done everything but take them apart. I mean, we've run cameras through there. We've run spectroscopes. We've run x-rays. We've done everything they can to do these things. We've done similar things with the Sphinx there. And I would love to stand in front of that Sphinx and talk to him. It's one thing. I believe history is very tactile. And to be able to stand there and feel that is just something that I dream of doing. I had an opportunity once almost to do it. I was in Israel at the time, and I was getting information about whether or not I could go down to Giza one day. And the day before it could have happened was one of those days where they had one of the big tourists shooting at the Giza Plateau, and so everything got canceled, and there you go. So, you know, Muslim terrorists ruined my trip to the Giza Plateau over their disagreements about religion. Anyway, the one mystery in all of this, I mean, again, we've done everything we can do to these things, but the one mystery that eludes everyone, and no one can say for certain this is how it happened, is how did these things get built? There are a lot of theories. There are as many theories about how the pyramids and the Sphinx got built as there are, you know, stars in the sky. It is one of those things where people will argue, and depending on who you're arguing with, you know, it could have been aliens. Not saying it was aliens, but it could have been aliens. It was aliens. Or it could have been, you know, slave labor. Or it could have been just standard Egyptian workmen. It could have been any of those things, but nobody knows for sure. Now, there is evidence for it, you know, stronger evidence than some. I mean, obviously, there's zero evidence for alien construction, despite Grant Hitchcock's books. And people that want to believe that because they just can't accept that 10,000 years ago or 6,000 years ago, depending on how you look at things, people might have been smart enough to do something that we don't know how to do. They just can't deal with that, and so it just had to be aliens, you know? It can't be anything else. But nobody knows for certain how they were built. But they do know this. I know this. They were built one brick at a time. There was one stone laid, another stone came in, boom. And they built these things over a course of years with a plan that they were trying to accomplish. These pyramids represented something, and they were trying to make them as firmly fixed as they possibly could. They didn't want anything taking away from these. They didn't want anything diminishing what they stood for or what they meant. They might have understood, or they may not have understood, that someday people wouldn't understand what they were saying. Their language would be lost and then rediscovered later. They may have understood that. They may not have. But they understood that what they were building had permanence and meaning. And so when they built these pyramids, they understood what they were doing in the sense that this is a definition of something. Whether it's a life, whether it is a belief system, which in fact it really is. If you understand Egyptian theology, ancient Egyptian theology, it really kind of is. It represented to them something very important and something very permanent. The pyramid is something that conveys with it a sense of eternity almost. The ideas that are contained within that shape are ideas that are meant to withstand the test of time. And one would have to argue that the pyramids themselves, the Great Pyramids, have done so. Even as mountains erode, as lakes disappear, as glaciers melt, as climates change, the pyramids remain. Now, they are not in their original condition. You understand that. But the idea behind them is still there. Today, it seems like society, not really sure why, but I mean, I understand the sociological element. I understand the psychological element. But the sociological ideology has glommed onto the idea of the pyramid. Because we can explain everything with pyramids. Did you know this? So, no doubt you have heard of the food pyramid. This idea that if you just stick to the food pyramids, you will be amazingly healthy and everything in your life will just be dandy, right? So, 5 to 12 servings of whole grains, 1 to 3 servings of of beans and soy, 6 to 9 servings of vegetables and or 3 to 4 of fruits. You get the idea here. And the people that put this together, and they put this together a long time ago, had an agenda and an idea that they wanted to last a long time. And the reality is, I guess, that this idea has so permeated us that the idea of the food pyramid is one that, you know, everybody knows and everybody ignores. And they ignore it because why not take a fad diet like keto or something else, or, you know, Atkins or whatever? Why not? Why do I have to follow this? Why can't I just be a, you know, slug? Why can't I take a pill? Why can't I have some special supplement instead? And you know, the food pyramid kind of goes out the window. When I was in seminary, we learned this one, Maslow's hierarchy of needs. It was a pastoral care class, and we were talking about, you know, individuals and what motivates individuals, and they have physiological needs. Sorry, these new glasses are just kicking my butt. Physiological needs, food, water, warmth, rest, basic needs. They have safety needs. They have psychological needs, such as belongingness, and they need love and intimate friendships and likes, and they need esteem, self-esteem, before they can reach self-fulfillment needs, such as self-actualization, achieving one's full potential, and including creative activities. Now, this is, again, in the social circles, this is the idea here, is that until you've met one level of needs, you can't move on to the other. So anybody that has physiological needs can't be self-actualizing. They can't be creative if they're hungry, which, of course, flies in the face of the idea that a starving artist is a good artist. And you got to be hungry in order to achieve your goals. Now, I realize that's metaphorical. I understand that. But at the same time, you need to, you can see where there's some give and take in there, isn't there? Not everybody in history had an intimate relationship or friends. And yet they managed to do those things. There are pyramids out there now about the 4 levels of social change. This is one that I find interesting, where you have this one is actually inverted, at least in its intention. So at the bottom of this pyramid, which is the base, and by base I mean the worst end of it, you have the politicians who actually put things into practice. Then you have the widespread adoption of ideas. Above that, equality, liberty, socialism. And then you have intellectuals like Bill Maher, Oprah, and Ron Paul who promote ideas that are thought of by the scholars such as Marx, Alinsky, and Aristotle. I'm not making this up, folks. This is an actual sociological idea that's being put out there. And there are people that function from who believe, because these pyramids, again, the pyramid shape expresses an idea that has permanence to it. And so there's just something about putting something in a pyramid that says, this is, boom, there it is. And so they read this stuff, scholars like Alinsky and Marx, and they go, well, okay, you know, that must be the idea that we're going to put into place. There are corporate pyramids. I actually saw a little bit of that this week because the company I work for has a motto, world-class customer service, which I actually kind of agree with, and it's not a problem, but it's intriguing to me that the company that I work for takes this corporate pyramid that's put out there by corporate, you know, think tanks, and basically says, you know what, we're going to mess with some of this. And certainly they want to be economically responsible to themselves. What's required, be profitable, obeying the law, sort of ethical responsibility, philanthropic responsibility. My company that I work for takes that ethical one and kind of puts that more towards the top than the other ones. I'm not saying they're a perfect company. That's not what I'm saying. But I do like some of the things they do with regards to customer service, in the sense that they are very much driven by the idea that the customer gets what the customer wants, and we go out of our way to make sure that the customer gets what they want, even if it isn't necessarily convenient for us. Okay, if that's the way the company that's paying you wants you to do it, then that's the way you do it, right? I mean, but all these ideas, these pyramids of ideas, seemingly, when you look at them on paper – they seem to have that concept of permanence and that concept of immutability. They can't be changed. No, this is the way it is. And yet we can sit here and go, but it isn't. And even when it is, nobody pays attention to it, which is why I find it interesting that more and more social ideologues are using these pyramid shapes to outline their positions on things and tell us what is and what is not. So what we watched over the weekend on Saturday was tragic. I mean, there are no words to describe what it is. You heard Pete there, Mayor Pete, talk about the fact that we are under attack. Did you know that this is a national security issue? Attacked by white nationalists. And if you were to listen to his speech very carefully and parse it, you might think that he was talking about white nationalism. You might think that. You might think that he was talking about national security. You might think that. Because he builds this idea as a pyramid that white nationalism is the be-all, end-all, the pyramid, the top of the pyramid of every bit of a problem that we have in this country. And in fact, it didn't take long after he said that for this to show up in my feed. The pyramid of white supremacy. In a pyramid, every brick depends on the ones before it for support. If the bricks at the bottom are removed, the whole structure comes tumbling down. So it starts with white people being indifferent and minimalizing and veiled racists and discriminations and calls for violence and violence and leads to genocide. This is what it was a fascinating discussion to watch. And of course, anybody who disagreed with this in the particular discussion that we had, and for the record, I didn't. I didn't get involved with the discussion because I don't have time to do those kinds of things. But anybody who questioned any of the bricks in this, anybody that questioned any of the ideas in this, anybody who said, wait a sec, ein Minuten bitte, was immediately labeled as someone who did not want to learn, someone who was being veiled racist, someone who was one of those bricks. Because you must be a white person. How dare you do this? And of course, as we watch what's happening post all of this, you see what's going on with this. You really do. I mean, it's remarkable to me. You don't really have to look very far in history. Remember this guy, Genghis Khan? Do you know how many people Genghis Khan, white nationalist, killed? Do you know that there's a story out there, you can find it yourself, Google it up, that Genghis Khan killed so many people, his armies, his empire killed so many people, so many human beings died under the reign of Genghis Khan that the earth actually cooled. I'm not making that story up. It's out there. This guy, one of these guys, I think it's the guy on the left, if I remember right, is a guy by the name, you probably don't even know this guy, Nguyen Xia. You know who he is? Or was? He's dead now. He died the other day. He died yesterday, Sunday, I think it was. It was either Saturday or Sunday. I don't remember. But he died. He was at the ripe old age of 93 under house arrest. You know who he was? He was a mass murdering, genocidal lunatic. He was one of the leaders of the Khmer Rouge. He wasn't Pol Pot, but he was Pol Pot's number two guy. How many millions of people did the Khmer Rouge kill? And you could argue that the only reason the Khmer Rouge quit killing people was because they ran out of people to kill. I mean, they didn't have an army to invade anybody next to them. And throughout history, you've had numerous dictators and numerous genocidal, homicidal maniacs. Timur, although he wasn't quite as bad as some of the others. Stalin, of course, Hitler. Of course, some of the others. But the reality of it is, you would be hard-pressed to convince me, because I don't believe it, that all of these guys were white nationalists. Now, are there some things that make genocide, you know, that they all have in common that you could possibly build a pyramid from? Yeah, you could. You start at the bottom with absolutely batshit crazy. That's where you start. Because they are. They are absolutely batshit crazy. And then maybe the next one is, you know, access to, you know, political authority, or maybe it's They have a narcissistic type personality, some kind of personality disorder that allows them to manipulate people and do things. But to just simply say that because you are a white person, you are necessarily a genocidal white nationalist is, you know, problematic in my view. It's not a very good pyramid. It's not a pyramid that was built one brick at a time with the ideas behind it looking for permanence and believability. It's something that's been thrown into something, into a shape, because you look at the shape as advertising and you go, well, I like that shape and I'll believe anything that's in that shape, right? That's what it is. It's marketing 101. And when politicians start glomming on to that 101, remember this social change pyramid? It's the politicians out there at the pointy end of the stick, the broad end, the base end of the stick, that start implementing the ideas that the intellectuals have come up with, the scholars have come up with. Well, what are those ideas? What are those ideas? Are those ideas tested? Are they true? Are they believable? Or are they just, you know, made up? Are they just simply ideas that someone else in a position of power and a manipulative personality have put together and convinced other people to follow along with? If it was really a real pyramid, it would stand the test of time. But these ideas haven't stood the test of time. Marxists clearly have not stood the test of time. Alinsky? Aristotle, you got to give him that, but I don't think they're looking at him from a political standpoint, are they? So when I listen to people like Mayor Pete tell me what the real problem in this country is, white nationalism, an attack by white nationalism, I'm a little hesitant to jump on butt pyramid, because I think that pyramid's made out of paper and it's just going to collapse when people start looking at it logically. And of course it is. Because let's face facts, violence knows no race. And no politician in this country, certainly on the left, has the stones in their pyramid to admit that, do they? That's the real problem. I got to get going. Take the time right now. Tell the people that matter in your life you love them very much. You'd miss them if they weren't there. So don't pass up those opportunities. You don't want to have that regret. Plausibly Live, I'm Dave Bowman, and this is my show, The Dave Bowman Show, right here on the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network. If all goes well, we'll be back tomorrow. Have a great day, everybody. See you later.
The Dave Bowman Show is a Slippery Fish Entertainment production for the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network. For more information or to complain about how the show offended you, the text or voicemail number is 209-565-DAVE. For more information about the show, log on to thedavebowmanshow.com.
Hey, I'm going to go do something productive. I'm going to go watch television.